Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Striking images today of Vice President Mike Pence at the demilitarized zone dividing North and South Korea, almost poking his finger into the chest of North Korea, saying, "Don't mess with us," saying literally, "Don't test American resolve over North Korea's nuclear program." The Trump Pentagon has struck Syria, bombed Afghanistan. This hour on point in our 100-day spotlight, are we on war watch with North Korea? Could we slip there? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What is unfolding here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was the vice president saying, look what we've been up to the last couple of weeks. You think we won't do something? Here he was after visiting the Korean demilitarized zone.
Just in the past 2 weeks, the world witnessed the strength and resolve of our new president in actions taken in Syria and Afghanistan. North Korea would do well not to test his resolve or the strength of the armed forces of the United States in this region.
General H.R. McMaster talked to the ABC this week's Martha Raddatz in an interview yesterday. And of course, he said, let's try and find a peaceful solution. But he said that when it comes to North Korea, President Trump will ultimately make decisions in the best interest of the U.S., and they'll act on them.
While it's unclear, and we do not want to telegraph in any way how we'll respond to certain incidents, it's clear that the president is determined not to allow this kind of capability to threaten the United States. And our president will take action that is in the best interest of the American people.
This kind of capability, he's talking nuclear capability, missiles and nuclear weapons, warheads themselves. In an interview with ABC's This Week yesterday, Christopher Hill, former ambassador to South Korea under George W. Bush, said President Trump should be prepared to back up his strong language toward North Korea, saying he's trying to out North Korea, the North Koreans.
I think he's trying to out North Korean the North Koreans. So let's see if that works. Certainly, it makes people nervous when they're not quite sure what he means by it. And, you know, big, great powers can't really bluff. So when you talk in those terms, you got to be prepared to back it up. And I guess that's what worries people the most.
Great powers can't really bluff. So where are we? Joining me first today from Washington is Missy Ryan. She covers the Pentagon and national security for The Washington Post. Missy, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
There's a lot we want to look at here in terms of diplomatic options, strategic interests, the history of this long, slow North Korean buildup, which has now got everybody's attention once more. When it comes to being serious about what may be a bluff and may not, does the U.S. have the forces in the region? And I'm not saying this is where we're headed, but does it have the forces in the region to really go head-to-head with North Korea right now?
Sure. The United States has had the forces in the region and the weapons to use against North Korea for years, but there has been a decision on the part of the United States in the past not to employ those weapons because the fear is that this could unleash a very unpredictable, damaging war, not just for Asia, but for the entire world. And now we're at this incredibly tense moment with North Korea where you have a new administration in the United States that is already signaling its willingness to use force in new ways. And you also have a relatively new leader in North Korea who has shown himself to be also very much inclined to at least threaten the use of force on the United States and its allies.
I mean, is it an incredibly tense moment, or is this all kind of positioning? As the former ambassador for George Bush to South Korea said there, trying to out North Korea the North Koreans, you know, talk with tons of bluster and hope that has its own weight. Is it real tension or theater?
Well, sure. I mean, it's rhetorical until something happens, and we just don't know where that line will lie. And certainly there are reasons to think that it's not that there are things happening below the rhetoric that are real, including the continual progress of the North Korean nuclear and missile programs. And again, a new administration in the United States that has repositioned naval assets in the region and, you know, at least so far seems to be willing to take risks that the previous administration was not.
What is the red line, Missy? Does the public, do you have any idea? I mean, over the weekend, there was a missile test, and some people thought there might be actually a nuclear test, the sixth one, which would have been even a bigger deal. But these missiles are going further and further. This one fizzled on the launch pad, and lots of talk out there about how U.S. cyber intervention may have foiled the missile test. But is a missile test a red line? Where is it? Is there a clear one?
Sure. Nobody wants to say exactly where the line would lie, and I think it would sort of depend on the circumstances. But one could certainly assume that there would be an American military response if, for example, there was a conventional attack on South Korea, on Seoul, you know, one of the oldest American allies in Asia and home to 28,000 American troops in South Korea. Or if, I mean, hypothetically, if North Korea demonstrated its ability to miniaturize a nuclear warhead and place it on an intercontinental ballistic missile.
Is that still the capacity that they lack in terms of delivering nuclear punch at a distance, the miniaturization?
Nobody knows exactly, but it's the miniaturization and also the ability to have an ICBM that would successfully hit the United States, the continental United States.
How close are they now to that?
Well, I mean, they've been testing missiles for years, and they do have some ICBMs, but so far their missile program has been fraught with failure, and they have many of the launches that they've conducted, including the one over the weekend, have not succeeded. And there are various theories for why that is the case, but certainly for any country, especially a developing country like North Korea, it's difficult to pull off this kind of technological feat. But, you know, I think that what American officials are afraid of is that they're going to get to past a tipping point where they are able and they have a reliable arsenal of nuclear weapons that could reach the United States, and then it'll be too late.
You're a lot closer to the Pentagon than we are. This missile test over the weekend fizzled, and it's not the first one that fizzled after some years in which they were pretty successful. Is there a kind of wink-wink understanding in the Pentagon that, yeah, our cyber guys are getting in there and screwing up their missile launch tests?
Well, there has been reporting in recent weeks on an American program to undermine the missile program itself in North Korea. And I think it's safe to assume that the United States is employing all of its capabilities. And I think I would assume that cyber would be one of those. There hasn't been much said about that, understandably, on the part of the Pentagon. But because there was a reluctance to use sort of conventional military force against North Korea for the reasons that we discussed a few minutes ago, cyber and electronic warfare are two of the capabilities that are seen as preferable.
I mean, a big reluctance because you could get into a huge war in a hurry. They have so many guns, artillery pieces trained on a big population center in Seoul. This could get very messy. And they do have nuclear weapons.
That's right.
Here's the vice president again. He had visited with the acting president of South Korea. Of course, they got that whole mess where the sitting president has just been kicked out for all kinds of allegations of bribery and so on in her inner circle. So they've got their own political uncertainty right now. But here's Pence saying the U.S. will no longer follow the strategic patience approach.
Over the past 18 months, North Korea has conducted two unlawful nuclear tests and an unprecedented number of ballistic missile tests, even conducting a failed missile launch as I traveled here for this visit. The era of strategic patience is over.
The era of strategic patience is over. Missy Ryan with The Washington Post, please stand by in Washington. David Kong joins us as well right now from Los Angeles. He's director of the Korean Studies Institute at the University of Southern California. David Kong, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
What does it mean to you that the era of strategic patience is over? And how do you read the tea leaves or something? There should be a scarier phrase than that for the kind of tension over this weekend.
Well, you know, in some ways, I basically think everything that Missy said is right. I tend to be a little more cautious about talking about the tensions because we're always talking about the tensions.
Yeah, but this is different.
And that's the question.
And I have talked about these right? for years.
Exactly. Is this time different? And I'll tell you, know what's different?
It's different rhetorically. It feels different. We've never had a U.S. leaning quite so blustery into it, in my memory anyway.
I think the big difference is we don't know what our side will do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, something might be different. But I will say that everything I hear is essentially within the same band of rhetoric, which is we're always saying we have all options. I remember Condi Rice saying that all options are on the table. We're considering them all. Every president does. There's a lot of talk on both sides. And you know what the North Koreans are saying to us this week? Oh, yeah? If you hit us, we'll hit you back, too. I'm not afraid of you either. Both sides are signaling to each other that if you start a war, this is going to end very badly, which is one reason that despite all the talk, both sides for almost 70 years have decided a war is not worth it. So do I think something fundamentally is different this time? No.
Is it possible that by striking that Syrian airbase, almost 60 Tomahawk missiles raining down there, then the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, that was a big display, you know, of rocks coming down. Does North Korea say, well, wait a minute, this guy is not predictable. He may not follow the same line. Therefore, we'd better talk with our buddies in Beijing and work something out or, you know, find some accommodation.
I don't think so. Right. I'm glad you asked that because there's one major difference between Syria and Afghanistan, which is they can't fight back. North Korea, if we hit North Korea, you have to ask the American officials have to ask themselves one question. If you strike North Korea, will they strike back? Everything I know leads to the answer. Yes, they will. And they can take out, as you mentioned, 28,000 American troops, even if we don't care about millions of Japanese and Koreans and Chinese.
And we do, please, yeah.
Yes, right? But even that, there's American troops there and the North Koreans. And if you think that they will take it, go ahead and strike. But if you think that they'll fight back, you have to think very carefully about attacking North Korea. And so far, every president has decided it's not worth it.
Missy Ryan, you cover the Pentagon. Have they found some new way to thread this needle, hypothetically, which would give them some means to hit out militarily without suffering or, you know, getting into a huge conflagration?
The short answer is no, they have not. You know, what has changed in the past few years is the extent to which the North Korean program has advanced. You know, you see them having now these solid fuel missiles, which are easier to mount and faster, which means less detection time for the United States and its allies. But I think that the important thing to note here is that what's really happening is that the Trump administration is trying to use the acts of military force that it's employed in the past few weeks as a key part of its strategy against North Korea.
So Missy, hold the thought right there. We've got to take a short break right here. Missy Ryan, David Kong, we're looking at, what, are we on War Watch? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're asking if we're sort of on war watch today. We've had the U.S. missile strike in Syria, the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, and above all, the crackling tension over this weekend and right now with North Korea. You can join us this hour. Are you worrying that we are stepping toward war here? Did you spend the early Easter weekend wondering if a North Korean missile test would send more missiles flying? Does the new Trump assertiveness look like savvy strategy to you, good negotiating, or just impulsive? Is it good to keep people wondering where the U.S. might hit next? Or does that keep everything rolling in a way that could go nuts? David Kong is with us from the Korean Studies Institute at the University of Southern California, director there. Missy Ryan is here, covers the Pentagon for the Washington Post. We'll hear in just a moment from retired Admiral James Stavridis. Lots of talk over the weekend. Here was National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster again, general who's now there at the president's elbow, telling ABC's This Week that this president is comfortable making tough decisions.
This national security team is capable of rapidly responding to those sorts of crises or incidents and events and providing the president with options. And our president is clearly comfortable making tough decisions.
And yes, this has been around a long time, but at a certain point, is there a point at which it's just not tolerable? That kind of talk is in the air. That is about the North Korean nuclear program. This is Steve Gaynard on ABC's This Week, former retired colonel in the Marine Corps and been a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, saying the threat from North Korea is now higher than ever before.
The real takeaway, I think, is range. For decades, presidents, both Republican and Democratic, have been able to kick the can down the road on North Korea because there's never been an ability to reach the United States. What we saw there yesterday in that parade were missiles that theoretically could eventually reach the continental United States, which is why President Trump thinks he needs to take on the North Korean challenge here and now.
And here, I think this interview was done in on the Korean Peninsula. This is ABC's Martha Raddatz talking with Lieutenant General Thomas Bergeson, the deputy commander of U.S. forces, in South Korea, saying that U.S. forces there are ready. It's a little blurred at the end, but he says we're ready to fight tonight.
You can feel the tensions, but clearly this is serious, and they need to know that we are prepared and that this defensive alliance is strong and ready to fight tonight.
Missy Ryan in Washington, I had to interrupt you there at the break. The issue people are wrestling with is this something different? Are we on war watch? The headline this morning, New York Times, slow motion Cuban missile crisis, that was diffused, but it didn't have to be diffused. It could have gone the other way. Where are we?
So what I would say, Tom, is that there's a clear intentional attempt by the Trump administration to hone and brandish a sort of reputation as a tough, hawkish regime that's willing to employ military force in a way that past administrations have not. And I think that, you know, that's why you see Vice President Pence pointing to the Syrian strike, pointing to the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan. It's also important to note that there's a new level of military operations happening in Yemen. But I would note also that some of these military actions that they've taken so far have not been so significant. We don't see the Syria strike really altering the equation of the larger conflict in Syria.
Even the equation at that airfield for very long, and they were flying out of there again.
Right. Same thing for the Moab in Afghanistan, the big bomb in Afghanistan.
Mother of all bombs,
And in Yemen, I think it's just too soon to say. So it really seems to be sort of a marketing or a framing thing at this stage. But they're clearly intending to use this as something as a deterrent for the North Korean leader to rethink, you know, sort of his approach to dealing with the Trump administration and to think about using some of the weapons that he's developed.
Marketing to Kim Jong-un. Do you think it'll work, David Kong?
If work means to stop war, deterrence has held for 64 years. It's going to continue to hold.
No, I mean stop the nuclear program.
No, absolutely not. I think they're going to take exactly the opposite lesson, which is, wow, we better have these weapons precisely because we need to be able to fight back. And that's what they're telling us this weekend. I think what we've missed on the chest thumping is that the North Koreans are doing as much chest thumping of themselves.
Yeah.
And they're telling us, okay, well, clearly now we need these missiles.
Wow, we're going to dive on in. Missy Ryan at the Washington Post covering the Pentagon and national security. Thank you so much for being with us today, Missy.
Thank you.
David Kong, standby in Los Angeles. James Stavridis joins us in just a minute. Let me get a call here. William in Madison, Wisconsin. William, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm reminded of something that that was said by, forget the name now, but it was Mark Twain said that he's noted that all problems come from solutions. And what I'm confused about, and I'm interested to hear from your guests, is what is exactly the problem we're worried about? If, say, North Korea gets the capacity to launch a couple of ICBMs that could hit Anchorage, Alaska, or Santa Monica, California, they could never fire them off because we would retaliate and obliterate the entire North Korean regime and destroy and wipe out North Korea. I mean, Afghanistan solved the problem, the Soviet Union solved the problem militarily by invading Afghanistan in 1979. We, quote unquote, solved the problem militarily by invading Iraq and then Afghanistan and Vietnam. What is the rush to take action now? What's the downside of just sitting back and watching this play out?
Okay, that is an interesting question. Does mutually assured destruction work in this case, or at least it would be at this point a relative pinprick, though it wouldn't feel that way if you were in Santa Monica or if you were in Alaska. In the U.S., sure, they could come down like a ton of bricks. David Kong, standby in L.A. Maybe to look at that question, I want to bring in retired Admiral James Stavridis, 4-star admiral, spent more than 30 years in the Navy, longest-serving combat commander in recent U.S. history, was Supreme Allied Commander at NATO. Interestingly, a lot of experience in the Pacific, commanded a squadron of destroyers in and around the North Pacific around the year 2000. Couple of years in the early 2000s, traveling all over in Korea as senior military assistant to the Secretary of Defense. He's now dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. James Stavridis, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Good to join you on Patriots Day.
Yes, good to be with you as well. You heard the caller from Madison, Wisconsin, saying, what is the harm? The Soviets had a lot of missiles for a long time, and they knew if they ever used them, there'd be a mutually kind of obliterating. In North Korea, it wouldn't even be mutual. The U.S. would no doubt take out the regime at one way or another, as the caller asked. So the question is, what is the problem with a nuclear arsenal?
I'll give you two. One is the one you've been kind of discussing this morning, which is the increasing capability. And so as the think of it as two streams, Tom. One is the miniaturization and hardening of nuclear weapons themselves. Yep. The other stream is the ability to deliver them at range. So when those two streams cross, and I don't think they have quite crossed as yet, but they will over the next 18 months to 36 months, I would guess, then we get into the scenario your caller is describing, which is a single missile launch or perhaps a couple of missiles launch. And I think an American president has to address that because it's inadequate to say, gosh, we'll trade Anchorage for Pyongyang and everything else. I think you need a better set of solutions simply because of the responsibilities you have to defend the country. And yeah. Then secondly, South Korea, a great ally and friend of the United States and a stabilizing force in the region, constantly being threatened by Pyongyang. So those are the two reasons I would put on the table.
Is there a military solution to the problem of the North Korean nuclear program?
I'm inclined to say no. I think solutions run in kind of three baskets. One is getting China to really heel in Kim Jong-un, the young leader, mm-hmm. and that I think can be done perhaps with a combination of economic sanctions, control of fuel that goes to them. So there's the China basket. The second basket is one you've also talked about this morning, which is potentially cyber special forces, covert military action. And the third is overt. That would be using really big bombs to go after these deep and hardened targets, would be unsure, would get them all, and the response would be raining down on Seoul while we were in the process of doing it. So the military options are not terribly attractive here, and I think the administration is right to focus on China, but encourage China perhaps with rattling, if you will, the military saber a bit.
You're at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy.
Yep.
Strategically, diplomatically, does the military kind of chest thumping, which, I mean, the vice president himself was out there saying, look, we bomb. This administration bombs, so pay attention. Is that an effective way to get the North Koreans to pay attention and respond?
We need to think of this not as kind of an on and off switch of it's a military solution or we have no military tools. It's kind of a rheostat, Tom, and you want to mm-hmm. dial it in. So I think there's a salutary effect of the Tomahawk launches, the use of the big bomb in Afghanistan. On the other hand, as I said a moment ago, I don't think we're going to solve this one militarily, so we need a basket of solutions that can create, hopefully over time, a diplomatic solution, much like we did in Iran, by the way.
David Kong, do you see the Trump administration preparing or having at hand now a basket of solutions, you know, like a surgeon's tools waiting on the tray to, in a nuanced way, deal with this, apart from the military bluster, if that's the right word, and move us closer to some negotiation or to some de-escalation?
In some ways, I actually think they do, because what's sort of overlooked by what Mike Pence said and a number of others have said is all options are on the table. We focus on the preemptive strike side, but they're also willing to try and sit down and have some negotiations about what's going on, which I think is actually a very important element, as the admiral pointed out. To have a whole basket of options, particularly when North Koreans meet pressure with pressure of their own. It's not like this is the first time America's bombed anyone and then North Koreans realized. I mean, they live with this their entire lives. So they're very comfortable with this tension. But without having an alternative in place, the tension only is sort of stuck in slow motion.
Let's go to Karen calling from Waterloo, Iowa. Karen, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I've spoken with you before. I'm a military mom, and my son was on the ground in Afghanistan, and now he is readying for another deployment And I have got a couple points. First and foremost is I think that this president has rattled his saber since, you know, before he ever got in office. And Syria, as the previous speaker said, was ineffective. We'll bomb their airstrip to really no stern or strong consequences, but we won't let the sick and injured people in our country. And we will bombing Afghanistan. I personally think that a lot of this, the bombing in Afghanistan was to divert the attention, to change the discussion. Prior to that, everybody was talking about whether or not the Trumps had colluded with Russia. Russia was not harmed by the bombing in Syria. They were forewarned about the bombing in Syria, and all the saber rattling that they're doing, quite frankly, right now, smacks to me of, well, we'll talk the talk, but we've already made an arrangement, so we're not going to walk the walk.
So what do you make of the tension over North Korea? Is it real to you? You're a military mom, you say. Are you concerned?
Real. I think that you've got one very strong saber rattler, and you've got another very strong saber rattler. And what my fear is that neither one of them have the gift of discretion, the gift of discernment. And as long as he's doing what he does without declaring war and getting a congressional consent that this is something that needs to happen, he's really a loose cannon. And I think, yeah, we're in a very real situation with North Korea, but I think that he got us there.
Karen, I appreciate your call from Waterloo, Iowa. Let's listen in kind of on this front. Is it a military push, or is this really a negotiating strategy with military talk wrapped around it? This was H.R. McMaster again, the National Security Advisor, on ABC's This Week. And Martha Raddatz asked whether President Trump would have a different outcome with North Korea than those before him. This was his response.
I think it's really the consensus with the president, our key allies in the region, Japan and South Korea in particular, but also the Chinese leadership, that this problem is coming to a head. And so it's time for us to undertake all actions we can, short of a military option, to try to resolve this peacefully.
James Stavridis, we just had Xi Jinping in the United States meeting with President Trump. And the president, you know, lots of presidents have hoped that China would bring to heel, as you say, or heel in Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. But the president seemed to come out of the conversations with Xi Jinping sobered about China's capacity to do that. How great do you think that capacity really is?
I think it's quite real. And however, we shouldn't overestimate that China can simply snap its fingers and reel in this Kim Jong-un. But I think China really has a pretty wide suite of economic, political, and even cultural tools to play here. I do know General McMaster extremely well. And to the call from the lady in Iowa,
yes.
And thank you for your son's service, if you're still listening. I would say I take her point about concern, but not only Lieutenant General McMaster, but also General Jim Mattis, who's now the Secretary of Defense. These are sober, thoughtful people who are not going to charge into anything. So I think we can take some measure of comfort from that.
David Kong, what about the Chinese leverage here? Coal, oil, finance. But President Trump seemed to have somehow been sobered by Xi Jinping, that it wasn't, even for the Chinese right next door, it wasn't so easy to stop the North Koreans.
Yeah, and I would just second what the admiral said, which is China has a lot of economic levers they can bring to bear, but they tend not to use them, precisely for the same reason that we tend not to use our military ones.
Why?
Which is, if you put too much pressure on the North Koreans, it's highly unlikely that they're just going to cave in. And I think the Chinese know that better than anyone. And so you risk regime collapse, refugees. For China, the risks aren't necessarily military, but if you actually use those economic tools hard enough and you cause the regime to collapse, refugees, regime collapse, a lot of instability on your border. So China's very careful about putting too much pressure on North Korea economically, the same reason we are militarily.
Tom, can I add
yes,
one
please.
Thought to that?
Yeah.
And I agree with everything the professor said. Additionally, China has a kind of a split screen on how they want this to come out. At a certain level, they're happy that the Korean Peninsula is divided. And they look at what happened in Germany after Germany was reunited. And once we get past the refugees and the war and everything else, that unified Korean Peninsula is a bit of a strategic concern for them because it creates an additional, stronger player in the Asian scene that they would have to deal with. Just a footnote to what David Kong said.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are paying attention today to recent U.S. bombings, missile strikes around the world, Syria, Afghanistan, and to the tension over this recent weekend with North Korea. Failed missile test there at launch, maybe as a result of U.S. cyber intervention. Lots of tension, hot talk in the air. There has been for a long time. And we heard the National Security Advisor McMaster saying what they really hope for here is a political settlement negotiation. But it feels can feel a little scary sometimes. Retired Admiral James Tavridis is with us. He was Supreme Allied Commander in NATO. Spent a lot of time in the military, in the Pacific, in the Navy. Four-star admiral there. He's now dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. David Kong is with us from Los Angeles. He is director of the Korean Studies Institute at the University of Southern California. You can join us. What do you see unfolding here? There's talk of the military having more leeway on its own these days. If President Trump lets the military lead, where does that go? And after eight Obama years, where a bunch of things did not get solved, are you ready for more action? What if that action turned out, ended up being war? Here was the vice president, a little more, just the last piece of him, in North Korea. All options on the table.
All options are on the table as we continue to stand shoulder to shoulder with the people of South Korea for the denuclearization of this peninsula.
The vice president in South Korea. Last week, after that mother of all bombs was dropped in Afghanistan, in the caves there, the president would not clarify whether he had specifically, personally signed off on the deployment of that big bomb on the ISIS tunnels. Said it was a decision made by the military.
Everybody knows exactly what happened. And what I do is I authorize my military. We have the greatest military in the world, and they've done a job as usual. So we have given them total authorization.
And the video of that came out. You got people responding in all kinds of ways here. But this was just interesting in case you missed it or don't watch. On Friday, Fox and Friends, this is on Fox, it aired the video of that bomb coming down to the sound of Toby Keith's Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. Then the hosts praised the bombing. That's what freedom looks like, they said.
Brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
And that's what happens when a 21,000-pound bomb explodes in the Afghanistan-Pakistan region, where at least 36 ISIS fighters have lost their life.
That's right.
Welcome to the final hour of the week on Fox and Friends. And guess who's here? Do you recognize
Geraldo
him?
Rivera. Geraldo, my video is black and white.
Good morning.
That is what freedom looks like. That's the red, white, and blue.
That is what freedom looks like. Fox and Friends, country and western, and mother of all bombs. There, Ed in Brookline, Massachusetts. Ed, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to advocate strongly that the U.S. should make a serious proposal to negotiate. It's a comfort that General McMaster says that he wants a peaceful solution.
Yeah.
But as we push stronger and stronger with these deliberately threatening, I mean, think of what Pence said today.
Yeah.
It raises the level of tension. We don't know if somebody on the North Korean side, including Kim Jong-un, of course, might do something rash. We don't know if our own president might do something rash. The Chinese have proposed, I think quite rationally, that there should be a negotiation in which the U.S. agrees to stop its annual war games with South Korea and to remove the THAAD missile defense system from South Korea, and the North Koreans should agree to freeze their nuclear program where it is now, and the two sides should sit down and have a serious negotiation. In the past, we have proposed negotiations over and over, but with preconditions. The North is building its nuclear and missile system because we threaten them. And the more we threaten them, the more determined they are to do it.
Ed, let us pick it up right there. James Stavridis, what about the negotiation path here? It's never worked out so far. Could it be done? And who's holding out on the, you know, who needs to give on what front?
We need the Chinese to bring additional incentives to the North Korean regime, or should I say disincentives, to continue mm-hmm. on without taking serious steps toward, and I agree with the previous caller on one point, which is I think realistically the best we're going to get out of a negotiation is to freeze the nuclear program. I think it's going to be a bridge too far to negotiate a complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and highly unlikely that Kim Jong-un would give up those weapons. In the end, I don't think he builds them only because in his mind we threaten him. I think he builds them because he realizes that's his survival tool, and he will, I don't think, give them up even with massive Chinese pressure, but we might be able to negotiate into a freeze. Again, the Iran conversation that we had, I think, mm-hmm. is a model.
David Kong, do you see somebody willing to bring pressure that hasn't been there before, or willing to concede something that would at least get to a freeze, so they'd be frozen, shy of real capacity, at least hit the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, I was a lot more optimistic 20 years ago.
Well, that's a long time.
We did have, you know, an agreement in 94 that lasted for 8 years, right? So there has been times that it did work, but those, you know, the history matters, and we're not there anymore. So I am much more pessimistic than I was. The thing I'd point out is, like, deterrence still works. I don't think it's going to evaporate. But that's not a solution. And there I do think that it's going to be a very long process to try and figure out something. The military, I think, in other words, the deterrence works, but that's not a solution. And finding that is going to be very, very difficult. And it's going to require China and South Korea and everything else.
So if you can't get to a negotiated solution, maybe, then what is the effect of building this bonfire of military bluster right up against the border, David?
Well, as I said earlier, we have been doing this kind of stuff and saying the same kind of rhetoric and putting aircraft carriers and B-2 bombers flying, yeah, you know, across. For it's not new. Their bluster isn't new. Yes, they have tested a few more missiles this year than last year, but this isn't, it's not like it began.
Well, and Donald Trump is just a more flamboyant showman about it?
Yes, and in many ways, as long as it's still rhetoric, there's essentially within the same band of what's going on. So it still is, to me, status quo.
Wow. David, oh, sorry, James? Jim?
If I could just add to the professor's excellent points there, mm-hmm. I think two somewhat new things, although we've seen it before in South Korea, but the turbulence in the South Korean political structure with the previous president now incarcerated and elections coming, we're going to have to see how that plays itself out. And I'd be interested in David's take, since I know he follows domestic politics in South Korea closely. And I think that's a part of the calculus we don't spend enough time thinking about, is South Korea's viewpoint, where are they going, what are they willing to do, etc. The second new thing, again, potentially, is if you agree that having not had China deeply involved in pressuring North Korea before. What's new, and which President Trump mentioned with President Xi, is the possibility of trade space over the Chinese-U.S. trade relationship, not declaring them a currency manipulator, finding ways to avoid tariffs. Maybe that new element will get China and would more on the negotiated path. So just two thoughts there, and I'd love to hear from David on domestic politics in South Korea.
We'll do that. And President Trump, of course, tweeting the implication that he was holding off on going after China as a currency manipulator in the hope that they would be helpful here. David Kong, what about South Korea's presidential-level instability? Does that change the calculus?
Well, I really appreciate the Admiral for teeing that up, because I was trying to find a way to get in edgewise that, you know, the South Koreans are not that eager for military options.
Yeah.
And I think no matter who wins the presidency in a couple of weeks, there's going to be, one of the reasons that this time might be different is that South Korea has not had a leader. I mean, the president
straight up
for 6 months has been essentially in limbo. So we've had a power vacuum with the THAAD missile launch, with the North Korea, with Trump. And so there's been just a limbo for South Korea. My sense is both of the leading candidates in South Korea are more, the pendulum is swinging left. They're more left, but neither one of them is talking about radically engagement policies. They're talking about trying to move forward, but I think we would see less of a strategic patience, but I don't think they would swing to engagement and leave the United States by itself.
David in Oklahoma City. Thank you for calling, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My question is, Pence is out there saying, this president has shown his strength and resolve, when in fact he had no input at all on dropping Moab. So what the world really looks at are his tweets, and his tweets down to this weekend, nobody really cares about the taxes. They're paid protesters, his insistence. And my question is, with his very fragile and unstable ego, are we not walking a fine line with North Korea just because of the two egomaniacs that are in charge of both countries?
Well, let's look at that, James Stavridis. I guess, first of all, let's look at the military piece. I've read that the president has given the military, and maybe this even began very late in the Obama administration, more leeway to make their own decisions in the field about what weapons to deploy and where and when. Is that true? And does that have any, is that germane to the North Koreans, the Korean Peninsula in some way in this case? And then we'll come to the rest. But what about just that piece?
It is true, and it reflects, I think, the confidence that Trump reposes in the Secretary of Defense, who's a career military officer, and that's a separate debate whether that's a good or a bad thing. But then secondly, it reflects President Trump's long personal history as a CEO of delegation. So, yes, it's true. Will it matter in North Korea? I don't think so, because the North Korean issue is just so balanced on a hair trigger that there will be communication up to and including the Oval Office. There has to be before anything dramatic is done there. And I'm sure that General McMaster over in the White House has his finger pretty closely on the pulse of what's going on in North Korea. So it's a yes and a no, I guess.
And then what about, I guess, first of all, North Korea? I mean, they're watching what's going on in Seoul, as David Kong says, and the instability there politically right now, the flux anyway. Mm-hmm. How do you think North Korea reads Donald Trump and the strength of American political resolve?
Yeah, I think they are trying to figure him out, just like the rest of the world is right now. Mm-hmm. And we ought to remember we're not 100 days into this voyage.
Amazing.
It feels a lot longer. but we will, we're all going to learn more about Donald Trump and his personality and the way he interacts in these kind of crisis-laden moments. I think the miscommunication of these two leaders does pose new dangers, and it is new. And I think when you overlay it with the turbulence to the south in South Korea, that's why it kind of feels more dangerous to me at the moment than perhaps it has. But I really take Professor Cohn's point also that, you know, it's almost like a movie we've seen over and over again. There's just different scenes that are being replayed. But we need to be mindful at the moment, I think, because of those two leaders, yes.
You were a four-star admiral. I've got a friend on an aircraft carrier out in that region right now. Mm-hmm. What's it like to be... How do you imagine this, or what do you hear from your friends and former colleagues in the military to have this more volatile commander-in-chief mm-hmm. at the helm?
I think everyone in the military, particularly when we're forward deployed, and I commanded a carrier strike group in combat, and I know that feeling. On the one hand, you're kind of hoping nothing is going to happen and that the deterrent signal of moving those military forces forward will have a calming effect, and it frankly often does. Mm. On the other hand, you're also getting ready because you know that sometimes it doesn't end well, and you will be forced to conduct these missions. So it's a tense time. It's also, finally, I'd say, a fulfilling time. You signed on to serve the country, and you feel as though you're on the very edge of real political, military, diplomatic activity when you're forward in an aircraft carrier.
In that case, what if, I mean, our caller has got this view that this is all a kind of a wag the dog thing, the president using missile strikes and bombs and maybe even the tension in North Korea to distract from his own other problems.
I think we're going to hear more about the Russia connection, which has sort of dropped off the airwaves over the last few weeks as those investigations unfold. But personally, I find it unlikely that this is some kind of elaborate wag-the-dog scenario. I think it is being driven legitimately by events unfolding in a number of crises. And again, people like H.R. McMaster, Jim Mattis, from what I know of Rex Tillerson, who I know less well, they're not going to be part of that kind of scenario. So I would discount that.
David Kong, listening to you, after all of this, do we just surge on ceaselessly against the waves here? Same as it ever was after all of this?
I make a joke that I'm bored talking about North Korea because I say the same thing over and over again. It's
and it's
a
your
grim
field.
Joke. Yeah, right? You know, like...
Maybe
it's
you
true.
Should work on Syria.
Oh, so much better.
I know. There are things, and I don't want to be too blasé because, you know, deterrence works only because of the costs are so horrific. So this is not a great solution. But and you always want to be careful for things that might be different. The one parting point I would make is we sometimes underestimate North Korea and its leader. He's been in power for 5 years. There's pretty clearly stability in that regime. It's not going away, and we have to figure out a way to deal with it.
Well, it has been a very unusual Easter weekend, and then to wake up on the Monday with slow-motion Cuban Missile Crisis in the headlines. Really grateful to the two of you and Missy Ryan at the Washington Post for helping us gain a little more perspective on this. David Kong at the Korea Studies Institute at the University of Southern California. Thank you very much as always, David.
Thanks. My pleasure.
And retired Admiral James Stavridis. He's now Dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Admiral Stavridis, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Happy Patriots Day.
Same to you, sir. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.